gather here in the knowledge that Shimon never saw his dream of peace fulfilled.
A towering figure in Israeli public and political life. But one of his famous sayings, which is, optimists and pessimists die all the same. I would rather live my life as an optimist. And that is what he did.
Out of the UK economy, first of all, the most important, the economy grew 0.7% in the second quarter. That's actually a better than expected figure. At least it was, it's more than was previously estimated.
What makes someone taking all the facts say, right now, I got to go out and get me some Deutsche Bank shares? That's the problem. I mean, it's all pretty grim. Now, one could say, yeah, that's an opportunity, but I think the cautious money or the cagey money, either way, has to presume that this goes lower.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. It is Friday. Today is September 30th, the last day of this week, the last day really of the month for the rest of us, because the next time we come to work, it'll be October already. 5:10 in the morning. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Welcome to another business day. We have lots to talk about today. We're going to do a double check on our portfolio today. Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management will be here later on in the program. We'll get you out of town with some cheap airfare, so stick around. But first to the WGN Market Desk. Dow futures are off about 27 points this morning. They've been lower much of the morning as we head toward the opening bell. Looks like we're going to start on a weak note this morning. Also, the S&P and NASDAQ futures are lower as well. Overseas, Europe seems to be lower as well, with the DAX in Germany and the FTSE leading the way, off almost 1.5% each there this morning. In Asia, the markets generally mixed. The Nikkei leading the way off about 1.5%, down 243 points. Here are some of the news stories making the headlines behind the numbers this morning. U.S. authorities are seeking $14 billion from Deutsche Bank to settle legal claims over its sales, mortgage securities in 2007-2008, which helped kick off the global financial crisis. The bank says it had struck a deal with its subsidiary to sell stressed stocks, stressed financials, but it was not seeking government help. Investors are worried, though, that that will happen to Germany's biggest lender, and that is what's bringing Deutsche Bank shares down and weighing heavily on the market around the world. Analysts say the troubles at Deutsche Bank are raising scrutiny over other banks in Europe, which are also in talks regarding mortgage settlements with the U.S. authorities. So this could be just the tip of the iceberg where that is concerned. U.S. stocks finished lower yesterday as drug companies and banks absorbed large losses. The benchmark U.S. crude this morning at $47.50 a barrel. The dollar gained against the yen and the euro. The day ahead, here's what's coming up. The Commerce Department will issue its August report on consumer spending today. Consumer spending accounts for roughly 70% of the U.S. economic activity. So that'll be important as we move through today. Let's bring in Paul Nolte now of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, our weekly Friday discussion. Are you in a good mood today?
We're slowly making our way to the wake-up mode.
Yeah. It's going to be, I think, a couple cup of coffee a day before you hit the full speed this morning. This Deutsche Bank thing really seems to be now the tip of the iceberg, if we're to believe the reporting that's coming out. How will that weigh on our portfolios?
It is hurting, you know, certainly when we saw the news break yesterday that there were some of the funds that were clearing their trades through Deutsche Bank have decided, and, you know, we're going to withdraw some of our cash and move elsewhere. That's when the markets really turned tail and dropped 1% rather quickly. And that's what we're seeing right now is kind of that reaction around the world. This will take a little while to play out. We're still somewhat uncertain as to, is this the Bear Stearns or Lehman moment that we had in 2008, which led us to the financial crisis? I don't think Deutsche Bank sits in the same position that Lehman, Bear Stearns did in the U.S. So while it is important, it is the largest bank in Germany. I'm not yet certain that we're ready or on the cusp of another crisis here.
Yeah, there's the concerning part for me, though, is to seeing that there may be other banks, that the scrutiny is going to go now to other banks besides Deutsche Bank in Europe. If this engulfs other banks, does this all of a sudden become a crisis?
could. And again, I think what you're going to wind up seeing is the ECB probably stepping into the breach rather quickly. They are already buying a lot of the bonds. There are talks right now of actually buying some of the shares of many of the companies in Europe. So I think you've got the European bank that's pretty much on top of this one. And I think you will see Germany step into the breach as well. I do not think Germany wants to see Deutsche Bank disappear.
Yeah, and in this country, too, we'll talk a little bit about Wells Fargo coming back and what we might expect from the week ahead and also from consumer spending today. We're on with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, U.S. stocks finished lower yesterday as drug companies and banks absorbed large losses. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 196 points to 18,143. The S&P 500 index sank 20 points. The NASDAQ composite dropped 49. Home purchases and home prices have been on the rise much of this year, but sales did slow in August because of a lack of inventory. For those buyers who have found a home, there's good news. After the Fed decided against raising interest rates last week, mortgage rates have dropped. A 30-year fixed-rate loan now stands at 3.42%. The merger with U.S. Airways is complete, and so American Airlines recently fitted its crews with new uniforms. Some flight attendants and pilots have complained, though, that the wool-rich jackets, slacks, and skirts are causing itching and headaches. It's not even Halloween yet, but a report from creditcards.com finds that a million U.S. consumers have already wrapped up their Christmas shopping. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Oh, boy. Did you hear that, Paul? 520 as we head back to the... They've wrapped up their Christmas shopping? What? have you even started yours?
I haven't even thought about it yet.
Oh, me neither.
I'm still working on my Halloween outfit.
Yeah, I haven't even thought about it either until just now, and now I have a headache. I wonder if it's the wool clothing. But anyway, we're back with Paul Nolte here on a Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Paul, we saw Wells Fargo this week back on the hot seat in Congress. The state of California has pulled its money out of Wells Fargo. Is this bank done in this country, or what's going to happen with Wells Fargo, and should we all even be watching this?
Oh, I think it's certainly worth watching. This is one of a long line of banks that have made their way to Congress. We saw Jamie Dimon with Chase in front of Congress maybe 2 years ago now. And we're bringing up the discussion again of are banks too big to fail, too big to regulate, too big to see what's going on? Should we break them up? So I'm not, again, this one I think is more theater than anything else. There are some issues certainly with what was going on with Wells Fargo, but I think anytime you see them in front of Congress, it tends to be a little bit more show than anything else.
Yeah. And speaking of shows, the rubber chicken circuit, as you like to call it, is back underway. We saw some of the Fed leaders out yesterday, some of them giving sort of a mixed reaction, mixed feelings about where they're going, where the Fed's going ahead. I know we spend a lot of time talking about this, but did you pay any attention to this? Is it even on our radar screens?
At this point, no. They do meet a week before the election, and as much as some of the Fed members say, yes, it's a live meeting, and we could raise rates at that point, I think they're kind of whistling in the wind on that one. It will be December that will be the one that everybody focuses on. So we have a while to worry about what the Fed will do next.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about our portfolios. As the season changes, is there any sort of thing that we should be doing with our portfolios? Should we open them up and look at them? Should there be any changes moving into another season? Or do the seasons of the year even matter with our portfolios?
It doesn't matter too terribly much, but I will say that right now we are kind of in the weakest part of the year, and that usually goes from early September until mid to late October. So we've got probably another couple weeks of seasonally the potential for a weak period here. And then the markets pick up. So usually the better part of the year, if you will, is mid to late October on into May. And I think the markets are setting up for that. So, again, from a strictly seasonal perspective, we're starting to see those seasonal patterns express themselves here.
As we move to the end of another quarter, does that weigh heavily on portfolio activity?
A little bit. There's some rejiggering of indexes, so I would anticipate to see a lot of volume today as some of the indexes get rebalanced, reconstituted, some things get added and dropped, and then you get mutual funds and ETFs that follow those indexes that will buy and sell those shares. They've been doing some of that this week. They'll finish it up next week. But from a, you know, what should I do with my portfolio perspective, there's really not much there to be looking at. We still look at the fundamentals of the companies, still look at the economy. And there we really aren't seeing anything new that gets us really excited about super economic growth to where we really want to be changing portfolios around dramatically.
So as we move into another season here, is there anything out there that you like? Anything popping up that might be of interest?
You know, it's interesting. Again, we've talked about it off and on. We had the Deutsche Bank news hit yesterday. So what did well? Bonds did well. And again, when we talk about a portfolio, bonds do have a good balancing effect off of the equity market. So as equities do poorly, like they did yesterday, the bonds tend to do well. And then the bonds will sell off a little bit as everybody starts to return back to the equity markets. So, again, still liking the U.S., very large U.S. companies. Even with yesterday, still do like international, and certainly a good sprinkling of bonds doesn't hurt.
And emerging markets, are those still high on your list?
They are. They took it, again, as anything international, took it on the chin yesterday. But international has been doing very well pretty consistently all year from the February lows. And we think investors are starting to understand that it's not as much a commodity-based investment anymore. And emerging markets do have a place in the portfolio.
As we cruise to the end of the year, does it look like we'll make money in our portfolios this year?
It does. We're up slightly, and that's the interesting part. Bonds and stocks are up about the same amount this year. And coming into the year, we thought bonds would absolutely get crushed with four Fed rate hikes in the windshield and ahead of us. But so I think really what we're looking at is more of the same. It's going to be a very slow market, slowly higher. But again, it's going to be a tough slog, and we'll see stuff like yesterday or earlier in the week when we saw 100-point rises. So volatility is going to stay between now and the end of the year.
Another good reason to let your portfolio be checked by somebody like Paul Nolte. Paul, any other potential roadblocks or quagmires in our way as we move toward the end of the year?
I don't think so. I mean, one of the things that we really are concerned about is whether the market is, or whether the economy is going into a recession. And that's where we start to see the markets really decline 15, 20, 25%. We really don't see that at this point. The GDP numbers yesterday were okay, and I think they will continue to be okay. And we think the Fed, although they are talking about tightening, they're generally pretty accommodative here and around the world, which will keep the markets supported at a little bit higher levels.
Consumer spending numbers come out today. Could these drive the markets?
They could, and it's one that we certainly want to keep a very close eye on because when you take a look at consumer sentiment numbers, they're pretty good, but I'd rather take a look at what consumers are doing as opposed to what they're saying. So retail sales for us is a big number and a good indication of how confident consumers feel about the economy and what their personal balance sheets look like. So if we see some good spending numbers, I think that bodes very well for the overall economy coming into the end of the year.
Sounds great. Paul, what do you have planned for the weekend? Anything fun?
It's going to be quiet. If it's going to be raining, we'll be inside as opposed to outside and playing in the sunshine.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again next Friday.
Thank you. We'll talk then.
From ABC News Tech Trends, the stakes are getting higher when it comes to identity theft. Cyber criminals are going after more than just your credit card numbers these days. There's medical identity theft, criminal identity theft, and tax fraud, to name a few. But cybersecurity expert Adam Levin says that children are also being targeted, and parents may not even realize it.
Somebody could have a 15 to 16 year run destroying a young person's credit, or worse, before anybody discovers.
He says the first line of defense is to be a savvy internet surfer.
Be very careful about phishing attacks.
Make sure to avoid messages or emails containing links, even from people you may know. And read messages carefully, scanning for red flags.
If you see anything that doesn't look exactly right. There's grammatical issues. There's misspellings.
And never give out any personal information that authenticates you unless you're in control of whatever the transaction is. With Tech Trends, I'm Mona Rivera, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program at 5:37. Dispatch from the Paris Air Show this morning. Renault has reached a deal in the Paris Auto Show with the Iran government to open a plant making at least 150,000 vehicles a year in Iran. This is European companies' race for share of the market that has opened up after international sanctions on that country have been lifted. The plant will produce Duster and Symbol cars. Starting in 2018, Renault will be a majority shareholder and have its own distribution network in Iran. You heard earlier in the program, if you're with us, that American Airlines crew have been complaining about the new uniforms that debuted last week as the U.S. Air merger finished its completion. The air pilots and some of the flight attendants say that they are scratching, causing some of these wool uniforms are causing some scratching. Also this past week, United Airlines set up a $2 to $7 fare hike across the board, which Delta and American quickly matched, but then the hike spread no further. It sort of died out. Rick Sini of FareCompare.com is with us this morning from Dallas to talk about this and other airline news. Also get us some cheap fares at Rick Sini on Twitter, at FareCompare as well. Rick, good morning. First of all, this United airfare hike apparently didn't take hold. Are these just trial balloons? Is this how this works?
Yeah, so over the weekend, we saw the 14th attempted domestic airfare hike. This one started by United. The good news for consumers, it did not actually stick. Over the weekend, it was rolled back. And they've only actually gotten four airfare hikes to stick this year, which is, I think, a reflection of consumers' wallets and how little they have in their wallets to actually spend this fall. So good news for consumers. There's still a lot of great deals across the country, especially out of Chicago.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how this works, Rick, because I think for a lot of us, I mean, you seem like the scientist when it comes to this. When they decide to raise fares, what goes into that decision-making process? And did they just throw this out there every time like a trial balloon?
Yeah, it is sort of a trial balloon. So what happens is that one airline, in this case United, for example, raises airfares by anywhere from $4 or $5 each way. And what happens instantly is once those airfares actually hit the marketplace, they now are on page 30 of shopping results. So essentially, airlines are probing two things. They're probing the appetite of the other airlines to match, which if they don't match within a certain period of time, usually a day or so, or start matching, they have to roll back those fares. They're also testing the appetite for consumers. If they raise their prices and then bookings start to go down dramatically, they're forced to roll back.
So you think they'll try this again? Or are they fishing around for maybe a higher fare moving forward?
Oh, yeah, no, they're continually fishing around. I would expect them to have another five or six attempts before the end of the year. Now, the only time we've actually seen them not try to attempt sort of monthly to raise prices, which, you know, if you were a baseball player, you'd probably maybe make the All-Star team because they're only batting just under 300 on getting these airfare hikes to stick. Is that the airlines will continually try to raise these prices as long as consumers' wallets will do it. Before, when we had lots of competition, and that was, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, and you didn't have four airlines that controlled 80% of traffic, it was a lot harder to push these hikes through. Southwest Airlines historically has not been jumping on these hikes. JetBlue hasn't jumped on them. And when they don't, they tend to roll back.
So as of consumers, then, we should sort of have this in the back of our heads if we're thinking about travel coming up, thinking maybe the airfares might go up, but we should take advantage of these deals now.
Yeah, you should absolutely take advantage of the deals now. The one area where prices of airfare have gone down fairly dramatically is over to Europe. We've seen the price point drop anywhere from 10 to 15% over the last 3 or 4 months. A lot of that has to do with fuel prices remaining low, but it also has to do with demand dropping for a variety of reasons into Europe. The kids are back in school, you know, terrorist events that have occurred over the last 18 months or so, Brexit, for example. So We've seen those prices drop dramatically. It's actually probably weather-wise the best time of the year. The locals are all back from their vacations in August in Europe, a perfect time to go if you can get away.
So the American Airlines, I saw photographs of some of the new folks in their uniforms. They looked all bright and shiny. How is the transition going, and how have you heard of any hiccups?
Well, they're going to actually transition completely over to a combined flight operation system over the weekend, and this is something they've been testing for months and months and months. So people that are flying over the weekend, just be aware that there may be a glitch or two here or there. Those are logistical schedules, pilots, airports, whatnot. We've seen sort of a variety in these mergers before. We saw, for example, Delta Northwest, everything went pretty smoothly, and we saw United and Continental, it didn't go so smoothly. So we're hoping that American over the weekend, switching completely over to American system from U.S. Airways, will go fairly smoothly over the weekend.
And so for those of us who do go to the airport, we occasionally see a U.S. Airways jet on the tarmac. Are those jets going away completely?
Well, it depends. Many of them are going to be repainted or a new livery or the new livery painted on them. But for the most part, the airlines are replacing tons of older aircraft with newer aircraft. We see those coming in each month in from Boeing and Airbus. And they're not actually adding more aircraft into the total fleet system. They're replacing the older ones. And over the next couple of years, the only sort of aircraft you'll see that's fairly old is 757s from the legacy airline.
I know you're probably like me. When I go to the airport, I like to do plane spotting, and I'm seeing fewer tail types. Used to see Eastern and Pan Am and all, and there's just a few now, aren't there?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of fun to do it at international airports because you see all the liveries from all the different international airlines that are there. But you do have four airlines that control 80% of traffic, so you're going to only see sort of the American, Southwest, Delta, and United liveries that are out there. Some of them have history along them. You know, United actually has the globe from Continental, for example. So I have a long history of flying, and I love actually going to airports and taking pictures of tail fins of particular aircraft. So it's one of my hobbies.
And do you think this is going to become an issue for consumers as they start realizing this, who don't do the tail spotting, that, hey, wait a second, I don't really have a lot of choices anymore?
Yeah, I think consumers, they realize that their choices have been dropped a lot. Now, there's some cities where you have, you know, airlines like JetBlue, Spirit Airlines, Virgin America, Alaska Airlines in some cities where you can go on certain destinations. But for the most part, we really won't know if flying is really truly going to be for the rich in the new world order of only four airlines controlling such a huge amount of traffic until the economy starts to grow at more than 2.5% or 3%.
Happy, safe travels, Rick.
Hey, thanks, Steve.
Right, Rick Cini from faircompare.com in Dallas. You can follow him at Rick Cini on Twitter, RickSeaney, and at Fair Compare. You can also find them at faircompare.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program at 5:49. Some sad news to report to you this morning from the world of marketing and advertising. The man who wrote one of the most famous jingles in history has died, and ABC News correspondent Brian Clark has that.
You probably don't know who Richard D. Trentledge is, but you probably know his song.
Oh, I'd love to be an Oscar Mayer wiener.
That's the most famous jingle written by Trentledge, who died September 21st in Illinois at the age of 87. He also wrote well-known jingles for V8 and McDonald's, but won acclaim for his iconic Oscar Mayer song. He wrote it in less than an hour and submitted it for a contest. It was chosen and used from 1963 to 2010 in 21 English-speaking countries. Brian Clark, ABC News.
Now from the WGN Market Desk, Dow futures off this morning 36 points. The S&P futures off 3. The NASDAQ futures off about 12 points. The crude oil numbers coming in this morning also lower by about 1%, off about 50 cents, $47.27 a barrel. Let's get the latest on commodities and agriculture. Let's bring in Orion Samuelson. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning, my friend. As we check in one more time from Arizona, where it's been a busy week with the meetings with the Director of Agriculture, Mark Killian, and also the cattlemen who came together last Saturday at Yavapai County for the 84th annual fundraiser for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. And some of the cattlemen feeling a little bit better because China says finally after 13 years they will again take American beef. But a lot of cattlemen, I think, are a little skeptical of how quickly they'll work out the language of the agreement between the two countries, and so it won't happen overnight.
We're actually hearing more about the Trans-Pacific Partnership in the political circles. The two candidates having a lot of discussion, debate about this. Is it good to hear this debate and get it out, or is it more concerning to the ag community?
No, it's good that they're finally realizing that trade is an important ingredient, not only for agriculture, but for the economy of the United States. And I guess I have missed the discussions they have had on trade. Of course, I have to admit I didn't watch the debate earlier this week. But the thing that has concerned me a great deal about the candidates is the fact that they don't talk trade, that they talk against the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement. And that's an interesting breach in the Democratic Party, because Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State, firmly supported the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Now that she's a candidate, she says, well, we have to renegotiate it, but under the rules of this game, you can't renegotiate. It's a yes vote or a no vote. And Donald Trump making statements like, well, not only do we not want that, but we ought to tear apart some of the others we have, like the NAFTA that passed back in the 90s, the North American Free Trade Agreement, bothered me a great deal from both candidates, because it shows a lack of understanding, a lack of knowledge about agriculture and the importance, because agriculture, Steve, is the one area of our economy that has always had a trade surplus. Yeah. We ship more than we buy, but we do buy as well, because a friend of mine years ago, he's no longer with us, but Dean Kleckner, president of the American Farm Bureau, often said, if it doesn't go both ways, it's not trade.
Right, exactly. So Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell had something to say about this yesterday. He said that he doesn't believe TPP will pass this year, that this will kind of fizzle out. Is that to be expected considering it's an election year, or does that bode not well for this agreement?
Well, it bodes not well for the agreement. And back to the Democratic Party impasse here, this is one agreement that Barack Obama would like to see pass before he leaves the White House. He sees that as part of the legacy. He is firmly in favor of getting it passed, but Hillary Clinton is not. So it's something that we've got to work on, and so far I'm not seeing much in the way of results. I don't think we'll get it passed during the session after the election, and we're certainly not going to get it passed before the election.
Yeah, it would be a surprise if either happened. So, Orion, I know that we've had a wonderful season here for growers in Illinois. It's harvest time, and guess what? It's raining now. Is that having an impact?
It definitely having an impact, because farmers keep reminding me it's not a record crop until it's in the bin,
right,
and we do have to get it harvested. I do have to mention before I leave you this morning, next week I'll be in Madison, Wisconsin a couple of days, because it's the 50th anniversary of the greatest dairy show on the planet. The World Dairy Expo started 50 years ago this October, and so they'll bring some of the finest cows and people from 70 countries around the world into Madison for the big event next week.
And some of the finest dairy products as well, perhaps?
Oh, of course. The Ag Club at the University of Wisconsin, it's a tradition. They have a tent where they serve grilled cheese sandwiches, and they're the best on the planet.
Oh,
everybody
gosh.
Lines up to get the grilled cheese sandwiches.
Orion, it wouldn't be Friday if you didn't make my mouth water. Thank you very much.
Okay. Have a good day, Steve.
You too. Have a great weekend, too.